I'm Dr. Brian Goldman, host of the CBC podcast, The Dose. Each week, we answer vital health questions that will help you thrive, like, what does my mental health have to do with my gut? How can I prevent melanoma? How much sleep do I really need? And how can I manage my health without a family doctor? I chat with the top experts to bring you the latest evidence in plain language, all in about 20 minutes. Find The Dose on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Jamie Poisson. So you may remember this story from 2019 about this high-security infectious disease lab in Winnipeg and these two scientists that were marched out of there under mysterious circumstances. The pair, a husband and wife originally from China, were later stripped of their security clearances and fired. The story triggered concerns about Chinese espionage and led to calls for more information from the federal government. We spoke to our colleague Karen Pauls about this story back in 2021. She's been digging into it for years. And there were a lot of unanswered questions at that point. Now, at least some of those questions have been answered, thanks to the release of hundreds of documents, largely from Canada's spy agency, CSIS. So today, we've got Karen back on the podcast, along with the CBC's Catherine Tunney, who covers national security and has been digging into these intelligence documents. We're going to recap this story and explain what we've now learned and what mysteries still remain. Hi, guys. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi.
Hi.
So Karen, I think let's start with you. And could you remind us what this high security lab is and who these scientists are?
Sure. Well, level 4 is the highest biosafety level, and it's used for research on easily transmitted and deadly pathogens like Ebola. We only have one lab like this in Canada, which opened in Winnipeg in 1999. There are only 51 in the world. So Jiango Chu was part of a team doing groundbreaking work on a treatment and vaccine for Ebola. And they saved thousands of lives during outbreaks in Africa. Canada was at the leading edge of this research, and it was a really big deal. She won a lot of accolades and awards for her work.
This work can't be done without teamwork.
We were proud she was working here in our lab in Winnipeg. It was a big deal. Her husband, Kenning Cheng, is a biologist who was doing research on things like SARS and HIV, but she was the star.
Okay, so a celebrated scientist. And then in 2019, Chu and her husband are essentially marched out of that laboratory, right? And they're stripped of their security clearance, and they were later fired. And I know that you originally broke this story and you've been looking into it for years. I remember very well when you did this podcast with us in 2021. And so what did we know at that point?
Sure. So one month after that first story, I broke the news about the Canadian lab's shipment of live Ebola and Henipa viruses to China. Now, it took another year and many, many ATIP requests to confirm that it was actually Chu who coordinated that shipment. We reported that first. And then through travel documents and tips, I discovered that Chu made at least 5 trips to China between 2017-18, including one to train scientists and technicians at the Wuhan lab. And then later on, after the scientists had been fired, we followed that up with a couple of stories about how security experts were concerned about access by Chinese military scientists to our lab through Chu, who brought them in as visiting scientists. And lab insiders were telling us they thought the problem was actually more about lax internal security clearance protocols and ways that scientists were getting around them so they could bring in visitors to get into the lab faster and help them with their research.
I've worked at NML long enough that you see people wandering around where they shouldn't be. Generally, you'll send them to the lab, they'll do their work, you'll be in your office, and then they can walk around and do what they want.
turns out both of those things are true.
Yeah. And just to be clear, back in 2021, did we know exactly why she was fired?
We didn't.
Yeah.
We had suspicions. We had all these pieces of information, but not a full picture.
So you mentioned the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So this is a lab that people will recognize the name probably. It has a lot of significance for both scientists and conspiracy theorists. And I just think if we could address the lab and what it is, why it's such a big deal, and what we already knew about how it connected to the story a little bit more.
Sure. Well, so the Wuhan lab actually opened as a level 4 lab, the first one on the Chinese mainland on January 4th, 2018. This is all around the same time as we now know CSIS was looking at these two scientists. Now, the opening was a big status symbol globally. It was built to focus on the control of emerging diseases and work as a WHO reference lab like others around the world. Scientists were excited about the opportunities for international collaboration, but there was also some concern from the beginning about security. Now, as you noted, the Wuhan lab is familiar to some listeners about the origins of the coronavirus. And there's been speculation for years that the virus escaped from that lab and caused the COVID-19 pandemic. And there have been and continue to be a lot of conspiracy theories about the connections between our lab, that shipment of viruses, the Wuhan lab, the pandemic. And while there still are a lot of questions, we can say categorically that that shipment of viruses that we know about did not contain coronavirus.
It did not. Right. Period. And the shipment of viruses, I think you mentioned it was Ebola, right?
Ebola and Henipa.
Okay. And I just want to be clear that we also don't have any evidence that COVID originated in that Wuhan lab. Okay, so lots of speculation around why Chu and her husband were fired in 2019, including, as you've talked about, some really wild speculation around the coronavirus. And we finally do have a large cache of intelligence documents that have just been released. And they do give us some answers, right? But Kat, I'll bring you in here because before we get to those documents, it's been a really long road to get here, hey? And tell me about the fight to get these documents and the accusations lobbed at the Liberal government that they have resisted attempts that would help people really understand what actually happened here in this lab.
Yeah, I mean, the opposition fought really hard to figure out what was going on at this lab, and throughout this process lobbed complaints that the Liberal government was trying to cover something up.
When is the government going to start being accountable to this House of Commons and answer the questions?
Now, originally, the government argued that releasing these documents would hurt national security, and that felt that a special intelligence oversight committee that Canada has would be better suited to look at these documents. You know, there was a vote to declare the Liberal government in contempt. You know, the Liberal government brought the Speaker of the House of Commons to court, which was wild and basically unheard of. And basically, what resulted was an ad hoc committee with MPs from multiple parties was put together, looked at the documents, looked at the redactions, and helped get these documents out the door, albeit years later.
Okay, and I think we'll come back to later these accusations that they've been kind of thwarting answers here. But now that we're at these documents, what do they say? Walk us through some of the big points, the things that we didn't know before now.
Well, it turns out that, you know, some of the concerns about the couple were warranted. And, you know, to be clear, what we have access to is part of a CSIS security assessment. So this is not, you know, evidence in a court. This is basically a test to see if someone is trustworthy and loyal to have security clearance to work in this lab. And the documents show that PHAC, the public health agency, was alerted in 2018 that Chu's name was on a patent in China. And that kind of started to set off alarm. So, you know, PHAC knocks on CSIS's door to let them know, you know, we have concerns. So CSIS looks into it. And at first, they have perhaps a more charitable assessment of the couple, especially of Chu. You know, they write that they don't think that Chu would willingly cooperate with a foreign power, but, you know, that she believes so strongly that, you know, that science can help humanity, that maybe she would be susceptible to foreign influence. But boy, did that change, because he just kept digging and kept talking to the couple and found out that she outright lied to them. You know, they did some digging and found that she had ties to PRC institutions, including an institution with links to China's military that CSIS, as we can see in this doc, is clearly concerned about. They go on to write that, you know, she was using the Winnipeg lab as a base to assist China, and that she was intentionally transferring scientific knowledge and materials to China. Now, I do want to stress that something that is clear in these docs, there's a lot of talk about, like, a potential threat, the danger of a threat, you know, what could happen if China's military got its hands on certain things. It's not clear what actually China has done with any of this information. It's not even clear that CSIS knows what is happening in China with Canadian materials and scientific knowledge. But it is very clear that they felt that she and her husband should not enter that lab ever again, and that they should be stripped of their security clearance.
Maybe to state the obvious here, I just wonder if you could give me some examples of what they might be so concerned about here when they're talking about how this could be potentially a threat to the security of Canada.
Yeah, well, it seems to kind of whittle down to her work and her knowledge of, you know, these dangerous pathogens and those ties to China and her deceit and her lying about those ties to China. These documents are peppered with the unknown, as I said, like not really exactly knowing what could happen or what has happened, but it's the fear about what could happen. And CSIS has increasingly, over the years, become concerned about Canadian research kind of walking out the back door and in the hands of countries like China that Canada does clearly not see eye to eye on many things, including human rights, and does not trust China with that information and has concerns about how it would use that information. Now, I think it does jump to a hyperbolic place. I think, you know, you can think of a zombie spy movie scenario.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's kind of where I was going.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's totally helpful, because that's not really borne out in the documents. But we know that the RCMP is investigating. It's been investigating for years, and we don't know the results of that investigation. So just to put that out there as well.
Hi, I'm Una Chaplin, and I'm the host of a new podcast called Hollywood Exiles. It tells the story of how my grandfather, Charlie Chaplin, and many others were caught up in a campaign to root out communism in Hollywood. It's a story of glamour and scandal and political intrigue and a battle for the soul of a nation. Hollywood Exiles from CBC Podcasts and the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Aaron, I wonder if we could just keep going on this Ebola thread for a second.
Right.
So, you know, you talked earlier about the fact that she shipped the live Ebola virus to China. And that does sound quite scary. And it sounds like maybe she didn't follow the rules properly. But also, I wonder if you can just put into context for me how common that is. Do labs regularly do this kind of thing? The labs that you talked about earlier, do they share viruses so that they can study them?
So, as I said before, China was just establishing its lab. It asked Canada for help. Canada said, yes, we have the scientists, we can help. But the question is, you know, what else was shared? Labs and collaboration and sharing is, you know, seen as a good thing in science. These documents show CSIS asking Chu a lot of questions about that particular shipment. And she says she just acted as a messenger to help transfer viruses to the Wuhan lab. But the National Microbiology Lab bosses, the chief of special pathogens, signed off on everything. In that first ATIP report that I got, there were weeks of conversations on emails between dozens of people on the lab side talking about the shipment, how they were going to do it, who were they sending it to, how, you know, what kind of packaging they should put it in. It wasn't a secret. The shipment wasn't the problem. She didn't do anything wrong there. But the interesting thing was 2 months after that shipment is when the public health agency referred this case to the RCMP.
Right. So essentially on this particular point, on the Ebola point, it's actually not clear if she did anything wrong here.
I mean, we were told she didn't fill out all the necessary paperwork and that this was a potential policy breach. Like Kat said, we see more concerns now in those CSIS documents. They were worried, you know, about other things going on. What else could have been potentially shared that the bosses didn't know about? But this was the big headline at the time, that there was this shipment.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about the conspiracy stuff. So earlier we talked about Chu's ties to the Wuhan lab, and we know at least some of that is above board. So we've talked about the Ebola thing. We've talked about how the coronavirus was not shipped to that lab. But there are also a lot of other conspiracy theories spiraling now about the Wuhan lab and Chu's work. And can you briefly explain that to me?
Sure. Well, I mean, the theory is that the coronavirus escaped from that lab, and that's how it got into the human population, and eventually we had the pandemic. So there have been conspiracy theories from the very beginning. Right now, there's a story out by Sam Cooper, formerly of Global News, saying that Chu led the Wuhan lab's research on bats and coronavirus, that she was hired by the People's Liberation Army to work with their top researcher in 2019. That theory isn't new. I've been trying to nail it down for years. And I've looked again at those documents that Sam Cooper is referencing, and I don't see a smoking gun there. I can't make that direct connection.
Since the release of these documents last week, this story's been really heating up in Parliament, and especially since Monday, when the Liberal and NDP MPs blocked a parliamentary investigation into the security breach. And I know that the Conservatives had called for this investigation, right? The Liberals and the NDP are both taking a lot of flack for this. And Kat, talk to me about some of the criticisms that they're facing.
Yeah, I mean, they're being accused of shutting down debate on, you know, a very sensitive file, and being accused of covering up with, I think, you know, the subtext the Conservatives are making is that perhaps they're covering up because it's embarrassing to the Liberal government.
And I quote, the information appears to be mostly about protecting the organization from embarrassment for failures in policy and implementation, not legitimate national security concerns, and its release is essential to hold the government to account. In other words, there was no national security reason why we couldn't have had this before.
These Winnipeg lab breaches are part of a broader pattern by this government of neglecting Canada's national security.
Michael Chong, the Conservative MP and the party's foreign affairs critic, said, you know, the release of these documents shouldn't be the end of the conversation. This is really just the beginning, and they want to find out more information about some of those lax security policies, for example. Now, the NDP did vote, along with the Liberals, to adjourn that committee and to shut down that debate, but they followed up afterwards saying that they do support a study into this. They just feel like that the Ethics Committee was not the place to do it, and that they hope it pops up at the Canada-China Committee. So it's not over yet. And we know, just talking just a few minutes ago, actually, to the Conservatives, that while we are on a break right now, which is why, you know, you're not seeing it being raised in question period, for example, the Conservatives do and are planning to go hard on this when everything is back.
Right. Because I guess there is this sense that just the fact that they blocked this parliamentary investigation are instead making this procedural argument that would essentially kick the can down the road, that it just like raises more suspicions, right?
Yeah, the optics are not good. And while I respect that there is, policies and procedures that have to be followed, and we have different committees to look at different things, it's not, I think, a great moment for the Liberals when you have MPs saying, you know, that this isn't the place to do it and that it's not necessary to do it. So it's not the best look. And we'll have to see if the Liberals will, at a different committee, vote to have the study, which is asking for witnesses from the public health agency, is asking for the head of CSIS to come as a witness and to take more questions on this.
Karen, you know, Kat mentioned that this could be embarrassing for the Liberal government if more details came out about lax security at such an important and potentially dangerous lab, right? You know, if this more details came out showing that this scientist was working with the Chinese government for, you know, a long time, kind of under their noses. But have you heard any other insights from anyone else about why the Liberals, and I suppose maybe by extension the NDP, would want to shut down this investigation?
Well, I mean, that for sure. There's concerns our own allies may trust us less with their cutting edge research. But also, Chu did not do any of this really in a vacuum. Some insiders have said she was kind of like an NHL star who's brilliant on the ice, and the coaches may turn a blind eye to any bad behavior off the ice. So if there's a big investigation, there may be questions pointed at some of her bosses. What did they know and when and why didn't they do anything about it? We've already lost a couple of really good scientists like Matthew Gilmore, who was the former head of the lab. He resigned to work with a bioresearch institute in the UK. We probably can't afford to lose too many more brilliant minds.
Right. So essentially what you're saying is that the lab itself might be on the line here. You know, in one way or another. Yeah. There's still so many questions I have about this story. Just briefly before we go, Karen, you know, you've been looking into this for so many years. And at this point, what are the biggest questions that you want answered now?
Well, you know, at the heart of the story is Jian Guoqiu. Is she a spy, a double agent, someone with a plan to infiltrate a secure lab and share research and samples with a government that might use that information for dark purposes? Or is she a science nerd, her nose in a book, not paying attention to the world around her, offering to help her scientist friends back home? Or is it something in between? Only she knows the answer to that. And that's why I still really want to talk to her.
And I remember you talking about this back in 2021, but have you tried to talk to her and you know, why can you not talk to her now?
We don't know where she is. She still owns two homes in Winnipeg, and I visited them last week again, left some notes for her, but we don't know where she is. She's been seen around town throughout the years, but the belief is that she's working in China.
All right. Karen, Kat, thank you so much for this. Some answers, lots of mystery still, and a lot more questions, which I don't think sound like they're dying down anytime soon. So I actually have a feeling that we might be talking about this again.
Maybe, just maybe.
We'll talk then.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's all for today. I'm Jamie Poisson. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.